After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey everybody, I'm John Manuel, along with my producer here and co-host J.J. Cooper and Hudson Belinsky here at Baseball America and BaseballAmerica.com. We're live on Facebook, podcasting. We're talking a lot of college baseball and draft. It's opening day for college baseball. Our Mike Linnane is under the weather, but he will be at a game anyway with Hudson today over in Chapel Hill watching first team preseason All-America J.B. Bukauskas. We've got our college beat writer Ted Cahill down in Myrtle Beach to watch the defending national champions Coastal Carolina open up their season. So we're not going to talk a ton of horse race today, though. We are going to talk amateur baseball for this podcast and this Facebook Live and talk about the 2017 draft and some of the players that we're most excited to see this year. So it's going to be a lot of top of the draft talk. We'll take your questions, of course, here on Facebook, but we're not going to probably take a lot of questions about the local high school kid you think who might have a chance to go 4-6. Sorry, this is a top of the draft talk for this year. And guys, we could always start by talking about the strength of the class, weaknesses. I don't want to get into that. That stuff to me is a little tired. We'll talk about that when the guys get going a little bit more. Hudson, let's just go start at the top with what we're seeing today. You guys are both going to go to Chapel Hill and see J.B. Bukauskas against Kentucky. There are other players involved, but J.B.'s at the top of this. And one of the things that gets talked about the most, I think, Hudson, at the top of the draft is the last 2 years have been very weak college pitching draft classes. This year's looks strong, and one of the reasons for that is you have a variety of types of pitchers. J.B. Bukauskas falls into the, probably has the best present stuff in the college class, but also is the, of the first team college pitchers, Bukauskas, Fido, Tanner Houck, Kyle Wright, Colton Houck, he's probably right there with Colton Houck of most likely to be a relief pitcher, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the question that's going to be answered with JB this spring. Whoever thinks he's a starter is probably the team that takes him. I mean, you mentioned stuff. This guy's got arguably the best pure stuff of anyone in this class, high school or college.
I think it's the best. I mean, I think it's the most – he is the one who most consistently – has shown three pitches that are above average or better. And, I mean, it's a plus slider.
And you and I have talked about this a lot over the past 6 months or so. Him learning to trust his changeup is kind of the key for him. And just watching him last week, because last year he would shake it off. And last year when Corey Ray demolished his changeup, that's he's not throwing that anymore.
It was not a pitch he threw with conviction.
And now, I mean, it's kind of a slower arm changeup. It's not exactly fastball arm speed. But it plays, I mean, and it tumbles late, and it's got big velo separation off the fastball. You have a guy who's pitching 93, 96, touching some sevens and eights, and then 82, 84 with the changeup, and then he's got a slider that's going to take a late left turn.
It's 84, 87. It's a power slider.
It's one of the best sliders I've ever seen.
That's the thing, is that we've been fortunate in this area, JJ. We had a premium top-of-the-scale slider a couple of years ago that we got to see up close and personal for 3 years with Carlos Rodon.
It was pretty good.
I don't think that JB's slider's as good as Rodon's, but it's a conversation that tells you that that could be a future. I mean, if he does it consistently with a 5 days of rest and it's like it is now, it's going to be a seven changeup.
I mean, it's a slider.
A slider. I mean, he's going to be throwing with like a six fastball, a seven slider. And if it's a six fastball that he's locating, I think it's going to be at least an average changeup. If not, you know, Dave Snow and other USA Baseball guys last summer said, at times I was on above average to plus changeup, and that's what he flashed in high school. So this guy's, he's excited. There's a reason to be excited about what you might see today.
Right. There's everything there to be a starter. Again, we're not sure yet, but It's unlikely to me that there's anything other than he's going to go out as a starter. We're not going to fully answer that question for 3 or 4 years because he's going to do enough. I would expect him to do enough this year that someone, as you said, a team's going to take him as a starter, and the only way he's going to end up in the bullpen long term is because at some point guys sometimes do that.
The other thing you have to remember about J.B. Bukauskas is how young he actually is.
This
guy's 20 years old. He really should be a sophomore. He left high school early.
A full year early. Not even a semester, a full year early.
So, you know, one of the concerns or question marks on him is he going to be able to go do this for 7-8 innings? And is he going to be that kind of starter? He hasn't quite proven that he's able to do that yet, but he's only 20 years old. And so if you look at some guys who are high school drafts who are in their first or second year of pro ball, they're not going 7-8 innings.
Right. And so nobody is almost anymore, JJ. The other thing is it's come back to him in that way. That should be part of the discussion. And this will be actually a fascinating thing to follow the course of the spring, Hudson, and the next couple of years in the draft. Because JJ does, you know, if you're a major league organization, your area scouts are filling out their reports. That's not going to change. But when you're at the 30,000-foot view and you're a scouting director – and you're questioning whether this guy's a starter or not, does the fact that what's a starter at the major league level is so different in 2017 than what it was in 1997 and what it was in 1977, does that change the way you evaluate a player like Bukauskas? I think it does. I think it has to. Or Hawk,
I absolutely think it does from the standpoint of we are now in a world where you have the true aces. And the true aces are the guys, partly they're defined by, they're the guy that you actually want to be out there in the seventh inning of a playoff game.
And the true aces really are, to me, the guys who have true premium fastball command. Is there anybody who's a real true ace who doesn't, you know, like John Lester, like David Ross sets up outside corner and it's an inch off the corner and he nails it. He hits that gnat right in the ass. Is there any big league ace who doesn't have like at least six fastball command? Those are the guys who go through a lineup three times.
I don't think there is. And when you look at sort of what the foundation of command is athleticism, being able to repeat. Mm-hmm. And JB, I mean, it's a little bit of a longer arm action, but this guy's an athlete. It's a very, very fluid, balanced delivery. I mean, and he does have some projection that way. He hasn't quite shown the fastball command that you're associating with that premium number one game one, game seven starter. But he's got the athleticism and the youth where you can think about him projecting a little bit and developing more command as he matures.
The guy who's got the arm action for that future command is Kyle Wright of Vanderbilt, who actually opened last night. We did. A couple teams out west, weather coming to Southern California. It sounds like it's going to be disastrous weather. So good luck to our viewers and fans out in Southern California. Good luck this weekend. But Kyle Wright got started. He's got the best and cleanest arm of all these guys, but Alex Fajardo, Tanner Houck, guys are a little bit longer arm actions. Just even Alex Lang's, I think, a little bit cleaner than those other guys, and certainly has a great breaking ball. But there's a lot of different varieties of college pitchers. JJ, among these other guys, who are you looking forward to following?
I was going to interject because I'm our question guy today, we actually have one along those lines. So I'll pitch it to you, both of you. Ben Fullenkamp asks, is a healthy Fajardo the odds-on favorite to go 1-1?
I think he is because he's got a little bit longer track record, a little bit better present stuff consistently to me than Kyle Wright has shown. Kyle Wright hasn't gone out and done it. But I think if Kyle Wright and Alex Fajardo have the same season, Hudson, and they both have three quarters of the time, they pitch with close to their best stuff, I think Wright actually will go out higher because it's a cleaner arm, it's the more projectable body. And I guess the way that one guy put it to me is that he's confident that Kyle Wright will be better from age 22 to 27 than Alex Fajardo. He thinks Alex Fajardo might be better from age 27 on. Alex Fajardo is like a younger-bodied guy. But he's like, while he's cheap, Kyle Wright will be better. After they sign a free agent contract, I might put my money on Fajardo. From age 27 to 35, I think Fajardo is going to be really, really good. But I think it's going to take him a little while to find it because he's got – he's got a little baby fat on him still. Mm-hmm. He's going to have to fail before he succeeds, according to the way this scout put it. And I really like the way this guy put it.
Uh-huh. And you the question is if healthy, right? And that's the question with all of these guys.
Yes, but Alex Reyes just drove that home to us this week.
But with Fedor, you have the minor knee things in the fall.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and, great
and,
point.
And
both knees.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't think that in this day and age you can really set that aside. So it is a bigger if, if you're saying
it's on the
if
resume.
He's healthy.
Yeah.
So it's that's on there.
Right, because again, when the last 2 years, and this is less than that. This is less. But the last 2 years, we've had a guy who coming into the year a lot less. I'm not.
I know where you're going, but it's okay. Go.
But I'm saying, but we've had each of the last years. Fido's not in this situation, but we've had guys who you start the year, they have injury issues, and it basically derails them. I mean, that's just happened. I don't think that's going to be the case with Fido, but with any of these guys, we run. I mean, any of these guys. The reality of it is that Tristan Beck is right now missing. You know, going to miss time. All of these injuries, the injuries play a significant part in this of where the draft line up.
And that's, I think that when we're talking about 1-1, you kind of, you know.
You want it
you
clean.
You don't want somebody who's got really anything. You know, you want the total package. You want the health. You want the performance track record. You want the tools. So
you also want that guy's going to take a little bit of a haircut. Now it might change this year because the bonus pool at 1 is so much lower than it was last year. And they're more scrunched together. So you wonder, like, this year, maybe this will be the first time that the number one overall pick actually gets the largest bonus in the draft. I think every other year under the current system, the number two pick has gotten the largest bonus. I guess actually in 2014, it was the third pick. It was Rodon mm-hmm. who got more than Kolek, and of course, Aiken didn't sign. So the number 1-1 guy has never been the guy who's got the biggest signing bonus. Mm-hmm. I don't even think that was true with Swanson. I have to double-check that one.
You know, what's kind of interesting, too, is, like, we've also... For a while now, we haven't had a year where there's a clear, this guy's the best player in the country, and then there's everybody else.
Yeah, it hasn't happened for a while.
So, I mean, are we going to see players do that this spring? Hunter Green, as we transition to the high school side, I think there's really two names on the high school side, and you can check out the issue with the high school All-Americans.
Brought to you by Under Armour.
But there's really two guys on the high school side who I see as candidates for 1-1. And that's Hunter Green, right-handed pitcher / shortstop out of Southern California, and Royce Lewis, shortstop center fielder out of Southern California. These are the two guys with power. I mean, you look at Green.
Both those guys pretty much do whatever they want to do on a baseball field. I mean, they make it look really easy. And Green is trying to do something in a way that no one's ever done, be a high school right-handed pitcher who goes first overall. Although I think he'd like to do both, or I think you've talked about more. He's an option as a hitter as well. Maybe not at 1-1, but as a professional, he has certainly potential to be a position player. And then Royce Lewis, is he a center fielder? Is he a shortstop? Is he second base, third base? He says that he can play wherever he wants to. And I've followed it for a long time, high school and college. You just don't see players put up numbers on the national team like Royce Lewis did. When you're playing peers of your age group, and Royce Lewis, like, hit 500 and then, like, walked 8 times. Like, they didn't get him out in the Pan Am games last year.
I mean,
and he's dynamic on the bases and in the field.
This guy's been the best player in the Trinity League in Southern California for the last 2 years. He's been the player of the year. Last player to do that is Austin Hedges, who was a first-rounder who really couldn't hit in high school.
Yeah, got $3
million. So think about it this way. We have a guy who's been playing third baseman. I mean, he played third base in deference to Chase Strumpf, who was the shortstop, who's now a freshman at UCLA.
And going
to
start at UCLA.
Yeah, and so now we have this guy moving to shortstop, a position he hasn't played before. And the early reviews are that he has made improvement there. He's got the tools for shortstop. This guy's loose. This guy's got quick feet. He's got a plus arm. It all adds up. The other thing you have, though, he's a 7-runner. And he can play center field. And you go look on our site right now.
He really does sound too good to be true. He may not be the best guy.
And it's easy 6 power, too. He got votes for best pure hitter when we did the All-American team and had the scouting directors vote for best tools. This guy's the best player at NHSI as a sophomore.
I was going to say the sophomore year. It was the sophomore year we saw him at the NHSI.
He was skinny and he wasn't physical like he is now. I mean, his shoulders are a little bit wider. He's a little bit taller. But you're talking about nothing but 6s and 7s on the card. I mean, that's a special player.
And he may, and I would argue right now, personally, and again, my opinion doesn't really matter that much, but personally, He's the second best high school guy on this list right now.
He's number two on our list.
He's number two on our list, but it
again, because that's what I'm saying is Hunter Green, as good as he is.
There's 4 months to go. You know?
Right. No, no.
And it's the way I've been putting it to fans who have been asking me about it is it's really going to be a matter of preference at 1-1. Because, I mean, do you want that 100-mile-an-hour right-hander with a plus slider and above-average changeup and command?
By the way, I did talk to a scout who had 102. So we have gotten at least one said, yeah, we got 102 for Hunter Green so far.
I mean, like, we're talking about...
And he does
about,
it easy.
We're talking about 102 miles an hour, like it's nothing.
And
he's
February.
17, and it's February.
And it's not flat 102. It's 102. I mean, that thing's dancing.
And again, we said that the complaint we had as far as Hunter Green on the summer showcase circuit as a pitcher was, you felt like every time you started to watch him, he was done. And yep. That was because he went out there, I mean, and
just mowed.
Almost every time out.
Guys don't loft the ball against
him.
Guys can't get underneath the baseball.
No one can elevate and celebrate.
You saw Hunter Green a lot this summer. What was the worst pitching outing you saw him throw?
I mean, probably his second outing at the Tournament of Stars, which is, I think, the third time in a row he was on short rest, and he wasn't expecting to pitch that day. And so he kind of didn't get to do his long toss, and he didn't get to do his whole pregame
routine.
He usually starts the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think he's got a lot of experience coming
out of
the bullpen. But I mean, even then he was 92-95 with a good slider. So
and he did not get torched that day. By the
no, time. I mean you have the high trajectory flies and the bloop singles, but it's not like he was getting beaten up, you know, and that's the low bar for him right now.
The high bar was just domination.
I mean, and the thing is, offensively, so his pure hitting last summer wasn't where it needs to be for him to be the first overall pick as a shortstop.
Right.
And then I think he would acknowledge that. But, I mean, we're also talking about a guy with true plus raw power, not just hitting it out of the yard, hitting it out of the stadium at Wrigley Field.
We saw 430 plus.
He put on the display in Petco. I mean, mm-hmm. just at 8 in the morning or whatever, however early it
seven
was.
Seven something
in the morning. I mean, like, it was local time for him, so it wasn't as hard maybe for him as for some of the other participants there, but it was easy juice at 7 in the morning on a Sunday. It was really easy juice.
And he's got the swing elements to hit for contact. The things you're also having a guy who's focused on both pitching and playing shortstop. And so you can really, really dream on when this guy puts one of those down, whether it's shortstop or pitching, at this point, it's probably he's going to be a pitcher just because of how advanced he is. But you can dream on him even more because he hasn't fully committed himself to either one yet.
I would put it that way, like going back a few years, a better version. Casey Kelly was a legitimate pitcher, shortstop, as a high school guy, could have gone either. But the reality of it is when you draft him, you know, like long term, the pitching is going
to
be ahead of
the. You're
going
to have to go back through the archives of the last 20 years,
Frankie
and just
Rodriguez.
See like other guys who were But I mean, like, gonna have to really dig on the other guys who were legit two way guys. I mean, John Olerud was a legit two way guy out of college. We have really that's another interesting aspect of this year's draft is Nick Prado and Brendan McKay. These two kind of like different versions of the same.
Hagen Danner, Joe Perez,
Hagen
Jordan
Danner.
Adell.
Jordan Adell.
Jordan Adell's a guy we talk about as the big tools in center field and quick twitch power bat with arguably the best raw speed in the class. Doesn't necessarily play that way on the base pass.
He might be the number one like get off the bus guy in the draft. Like if you're just looking like body, like nothing. I mean, Royce Lewis, Hunter Green, good looking ball players. Jordan Adell walks off the bus and just. I mean, he just looks the part. He's got the shoulders. He got the skinny little legs. I mean, he just looks so twitchy.
And massively improved
and,
over the summer.
And the thing is,
aptitude.
Like, and I think it needs to be said that this guy is legitimate as a pitcher.
Right.
And was a pitcher early in his career and was not a position player. So he's made that adjustment over the years. The hit tool's still going to be a question, though. And that's
why he's behind those other guys.
That's why he's not the best player in the class. Is because you still have those hit tool questions that he's going to have to be answering, not just this spring, but throughout the first few years of his minor league career. But on the mound, this guy's 92-95 with one of the better breaking balls in the class. And you're talking about a hard 11:30-6 kind of snapper that's diving late and it's got low 80s velocity. That's different. That's not normal.
Hudson's passion for the prep class this year it runs deep. It runs very deep.
And the funny
deep thing
is, and I think your passion for the 18 class may exceed this.
Yeah, we had, I think, three underclassmen make All-America teams. Bryce Durang, who is himself a pretty special player, is a second-team middle infielder. Jared Kelenic, who was a third-team outfielder.
Physical.
Yeah.
Physical beast.
Yeah.
I can't believe that guy.
Jacked.
I did not realize until like a month ago that he was 2018. I just assumed he was a 2017 class, and then we did the top 100, and we're going over. I was like, wait a minute, where is this guy? And I looked him up. That guy is an 18?
He looked really good at TOS as one of the youngest guys there.
Yeah, I mean...
Worth remembering. I mean, you were talking about young for the class.
Hunter Green. Yeah, I mean, Hunter's going to turn 18 in August. So he's going to play
He'll
most
be drafted
of his first...
as a 17-year-old.
It's like Trout. Like Trout was drafted as a 17-year-old and turned 18 in August. It's an August 7th birthday for Trout.
Another one who's really young for this first-team All-Americans is Mark Vientos, who's going to play shortstop for American Heritage, and we'll see him at NHSI next month. This guy is pretty interesting because I've had multiple guys say he's a poor man's Manny Machado because he doesn't quite have those shortstop actions like Manny Machado actually does have and could be a legit shortstop.
Did it last year when J.J. Hardy got hurt.
Yeah.
Like 30 games.
But this guy's got that hard contact ability, and he's extremely young for the class, also going to be a 17-year-old draft. Just turned 17 in November, I believe.
One thing I wanted to ask about those two-way guys is I do think sometimes people – it seems like you expect more out of those guys. Oh, if he puts one down, he's going to get better. I don't know if that always happens. I think sometimes these players lose their athlete. Whereas, like for Prado and McKay, they're not twitchy. They're baseball athletes. I just was texting with a scout the other day about Brendan McKay and seeing him this, and he says this guy looks ready to go from day one. These are two of the most decorated players as amateur baseball. That's what links them to me is they're both first base and left-handers. I think Prado's clearly the bats ahead of the arm, right, Prado, but it's more of like a Lyle Overbay-ish, like a. And it's hit over power. It's like Dominic Smith, Jake Bauer, these guys we talked about.
Really good plate discipline and
advanced
pitch
approach.
Recognition. He's very, very difficult to get out.
And that's Brendan McKay. Brendan McKay on the college national team this summer was the best pure hitter. He wasn't the best position player prospect because he's not as athletic as Jaron Kendall. But pure hit, Brendan McKay's well ahead of anybody else in the class.
It's that kind of athleticism that we're talking about. Because, like, Jordan Adell is a very different kind of athlete than Nick Prado. Nick Prado is just more coordinated, body control, always in control of what's happening on the field.
It's not as much twitchy as much as it is.
Not twitchy, but...
It's baseball athleticism.
But well-coordinated athlete.
It's the kind of athleticism I would think if you're scouting, like, in other sports, you're looking for, again, a quarterback who's not... twitchy, but is always in control. Or if it's like in basketball, it'll be a post player, but who's graceful. Maybe not explosive, but is smooth. It's kind of like, these guys are both smooth athletes. Mm-hmm. They're just not twitchy athletes.
Well, the thing I kind of want to ask both of you guys is when we talk about the college bats in this class, Jaron Kendall is at the top of the list right now. This is, though, a class that when you talk to scouts, when you talk to scouting directors, they say, that is very unsettled right now. We don't know who the college bats. This is not a year where you come into the year and you've got these three or four guys at the top who pretty much have to play their way out of being the top guy.
But that's Brendan McKay. He is in that. He's the next guy. Right. That's the thing is that it's a draft class, at least on the college side, without very many left-handed pitching options. He's the best left-handed mm-hmm. pitcher, and he's the best pure hitter in the class. It's very strange to have one guy be both of those. That's mm-hmm. So he could be a top 10 pick as a hitter. He could be a top 10 pick as a pitcher. That is very rare.
Yeah.
I don't see that happen. Yeah. I don't remember
but
that happening.
McKay, I mean, who y'all do you think, when it's all said and done, who ends up being the best college bats in this class?
So I think the Kendall fits into that Andrew Benintendi, Dansby Swanson kind of class of college play, position
Corey
player,
Ray.
Nick Senzel kind of type. Where, I mean... We kind of know what that's going to be like this mm-hmm. spring. I mean, you're talking a little bit undersized, very quick twitch, very good performance track record going back to high school.
Long track record. Mm-hmm. His area codes when he was in high school, he was like knocked people's socks off.
Yeah, I mean, he this isn't a guy who was unknown and went to college. Right. So you've got him. I think Pavin Smith is another really interesting one towards the top of this class. Another Smith is Kevin Smith, the shortstop at Maryland, who's, I think, going to surprise some people with his power potential this year. A really interesting shortstop actions, which you don't see a lot in this class. There are very few pure shortstops, high school or college, in this class, which is has been a strength in some of these more recent drafts.
That's why Kevin Smith was the first team All-America choice. He had a really good cape. He has infield actions, middle of the diamond actions. The caveat is he's hit 260 in 2 years of college, basically. So, if he has a big offensive year, if he hits 320 with 10 home runs, that guy's going to fly off the board.
Oh yeah, I mean, and two that I'd like to mention from locally, Brian Miller, I think, is a really, really good player, and I think
second team All-American.
He's just starting to realize his potential, and just watching him preseason, it's a long through the zone, like bat staying in the zone forever. It's going to be a high contact guy. He's a plus to plus plus runner, and he's really good in center field.
He checks a lot of boxes that teams want to see. That's why he's a second team All-American. He checks the analytics boxes. They've got him, you know, a lot of data from the Cape Cod League. He ran a registered 6.6 in the Cape. He's at least a plus runner, probably, and it plays. Mm-hmm. He has a high performance track record. He's hit for average in the Cape. He's hit for average in North Carolina. He hit for average in the Coastal Plain League. So he checks all these boxes that analytically inclined clubs like to see. He's got a very high floor. And, again, I agree with you. Whereas locally, we have NC State with Brock Dethridge, who's a much more physical player, didn't make the All-America team, has power, but didn't play in the Cape. And you got raw 8 run times on him. It doesn't play. It doesn't steal a ton of bases. Spent the summer working on his grandfather's farm in Alamance County. Didn't play in the Cape. So he's country strong.
He's a fine player.
He's raw for a college guy.
I wouldn't kind of consider him in that top group. And I think Evan Mendoza is another one who's kind of a pick-to-click type for me.
I love Evan Mendoza.
A very fluid swing. Originally went to NC State as a pitcher.
Right. Was in their opening day rotation. Opening day rotation as a freshman, first weekend. So the other two bats I like, JJ, Michael Gigliotti. Lipscomb had a great cape. Good story. Played famous in high school, at least played on a famous high school baseball team at Archbishop McCarthy in South Florida. So, yes, it's Lipscomb, but he's performed against high-caliber talent in South Florida in high school and in the Cape. True seven-runner, center fielder, checks a lot of those boxes for teams. But then my other cheese ball is Keston Hiura. I mean, we'll see if the elbow bounces back from this platelet-rich treatment. He's playing this weekend. I think he's DHing. I don't think he's playing in the field anytime soon. I love the buggy whip in his swing. I love the performance track record. Hit for power in high school. Led the state of California and home runs as a high school senior. And he keeps on hitting in college. I don't know where he winds up. He probably winds up as a big league left fielder. Maybe he's from this new phylum of this bat first second baseman where 9 second basemen hit 20 or more home runs in the big leagues. If you told me 10 years from now that Keston Hiura wound up having a Brian Dozier type big league season or two where I'm not going to say 40 home runs, but who would have ever said 40 home runs for Brian Dozier, for crying out loud? I think he hit 8 in 4 years or 8 his senior year at Southern Miss. He's my guy where he winds up being an offense, a really offensive second baseman and a potential big league all-star. I like him.
The thing that stands out to me about this, though, is that the two best college hitters we're not talking about for this because probably, arguably, the two most impactful college hitters potentially are guys who aren't eligible for this year's draft class. Seth Beer, I mean, again, if he builds on what he did last year, is that fair to say?
He was offensively the best offensive player in college baseball, arguably, last year. He was right there with McKay, right there with Zach Collins, right there with Kyle Lewis. You know, he was up there productivity-wise.
And then
he had a bad summer again. He hasn't been good in July the last 2 years. But
yeah.
But for Clemson, who cares? Yeah, he's great from February to June.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I'm not huge on him.
Haven't thought of him as being quite the top of the class. He's going to have the best performance, probably.
He lacks the baseball athleticism we're talking about. He's got old man skills. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a Bill James thing. But he's really good college hitter right now, and I think he could be, you know, maybe he's a Ben Grieve type, to use another player. Like, Ben Grieve was great his first couple of years in the big leagues, and then he didn't have a long career. So maybe that's the kind of player he is.
And the other one along those lines is Lucan Baker this year not going to be the two-way star.
But I think his draft status took a big hit because I mean, he's like a bigger CJ Krohn. He has to get those power a lot to be a first round pick next year.
But he might, though. He might.
He does have feel to hit.
That one is like, you don't want to get too caught up in like how these guys profile.
Yes.
Because sometimes that can hurt you. When it comes time to pick the big league roster and to fill out the lineup card, the guys who can hit are going
to
play.
Those two guys hit, they have feel for hitting, and they get to their power. That's an important thing to remember.
The thing is, they do have to consistently get to it, and they're going to have to continue to prove that they're going to consistently get to it. And with Pavin Smith, the first baseman at Virginia, he has not consistently gotten to his power.
No.
He shows raw power, but that power has not consistently played in games. And so that's what separates him from the Kendall class.
Just comp him. He's a better pure hitter, to the scouts I talked to, than Matt Feiss was, who went, 15th, 16th in last year's draft? He doesn't have Matt Feiss's raw power, and he doesn't have Matt Feiss's game power yet. And people had questions about Matt Feiss's power. I think the pro scouts are a little light on his game power last year. But that's a question.
And that was with Matt Feiss, catcher, who then moved to first base.
Right, but those guys who saw him in pro ball, like we talked about, two different sets. You know, Matt Feiss, to me, in pro ball, is also playing like game 100 for the first time ever. Well, we saw him pretty good for a college national team the year before and last spring for Virginia, as far as the power goes.
So what? It's February 17th, right? So the guys who are playing right now and are going to be first-round picks and are going to play through the dog days of August, I don't know. You kind of give them a pass a little bit. He did perform.
You can't really
look at what they are in August relative to the year that you follow them for the draft.
And the guys who do it, like Nick Senzel, you're like, man, Nick Senzel's cool.
Yeah, Nick Senzel's really, really good.
Yeah.
It's not always true, though. You do get those glimpses that, maybe this guy's not, what the amateurs, the area scouts thought.
But he was, performance-wise, he was.
I'm not saying in Theis's case. It always goes back to Mark Appel.
It does. It does always go back to Mark Appel, JJ.
Theis is a great player to bring up because last year, I remember when he started to he was better than we realized initially, but when he started to really build up helium, my question for guys was like, well, where is he going to play? And then they're like, he's going to hit.
Exactly. That's Lucan Baker, and that's Seth Beer to wrap that conversation.
We have one more question I wanted to get to you guys. We talked about Royce Lewis earlier, but we didn't. The question is, can Royce Lewis stick in the dirt, or is he destined for the outfield?
He can stick in the dirt. I don't know if that's necessarily at shortstop, but third base, no question he could play third base.
And, this is a guy, he's a multifunctional tool from the standpoint of you can put him at third base, but maybe you draft him. He may play center field, not because he can't play in the dirt, because the team that drafts him may say, this guy's like stud center fielder for us.
Well, that's what happened. Also, the bat. Again, the bat. Sometimes players who need development time defensively don't get it because the bat's just too good. And that could be Royce Lewis. So if it sounds like we're jacked for the draft, we are jacked for the draft.
This could be a really good
draft. This guy's especially jacked for the draft. This guy's jacked for pretty much everything.
We didn't even get into the high school lefties.
Yeah. No, we didn't even get to
D.L. high school lefties. D.L. Hall.
Oh, heard he was nasty in his first scrimmage. He's pitching on Saturday against Oscar Cerritos in Georgia. South Georgia matchup.
I love the South Georgia pitching phylum.
That's a lot of people are doing that run of Florida State Friday, D.L. Hall, Oscar Cerritos on Saturday, and then Florida State again on Sunday. That's a good run.
But we got to wrap this up because we got to get out to a game.
Yeah, we do.
We have games to get to, other magazines to do, websites to do. So plenty more coming up this year at Baseball America and BaseballAmerica.com and on our Facebook page, Facebook.com/BaseballAmericaMag. For JJ and for Hudson, I'm John. We'll see you next time. So long, everybody.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.